Ealing Studios present The Captive Heart, made at Ealing Studios, London, and in the British zone of Germany, with Michael Redgrave, Mervyn Johns, Basil Radford, Jack Warner, Jimmy Hanley, Gordon Jackson, Carol Stepanek, Ralph Michael, Derek Bond, Guy Middleton, Jack Lambert, Rachel Kempson, Frederick Lester, Muriel Forbes, Robert Windham, Jane Barrett, Gladys Henson, and officers and men of the 51st Highland Division and the 50th AA Brigade. Screenplay by Angus MacPhail and Guy Morgan. Original story by Patrick Kirwan. Associate producer Michael Relf. Director of Photography, Douglas Slocum. Sound Supervisor, Eric Williams. Recordist, Len Page. Editor, Charles Haas. Production Supervisor, Hal Mason. Art Director, Michael Relf. Unit Manager, H.E.H. Hand. Camera Operator, Jack Parker. Music by Alan Rossthorne. Played by the Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by Ernest Irving. Grateful acknowledgement is made to the War Office and the British Army of the Rhine for their friendly help in the production of this picture. Produced by Michael Balkin. Directed by Basil Dearden. Escorted by German soldiers, a column of British war prisoners marches wearily through France in June of 1940.
This film is dedicated to prisoners of war. Their unbroken spirit is the symbol of a moral victory for which no bells have pealed, and which will not be remembered with the battle names on regimental colors. It was a war in which no decorations could be given, but to have come out of it with a whole spirit is its highest honor. These are a few of those men captured in the summer of 1940. They were the men who stood on the Diel, the Somme, and the La Bassée Canal, who fought at Calais, Abbeville, St. Valery, and the vital perimeter round the beaches of Dunkirk. The men who held on until the German armor thundered past their lines. 220 miles they marched into captivity, through that blazing, dusty June, through France, through Belgium, through Holland, to the Rhine.
Exhausted. Many of them are wounded. A young soldier drinks from a canteen and hands it to a short, older man who gulps thirstily before passing the canteen to his taller mate. Finding it empty, the taller man throws the canteen away. Then, in memory, he drinks down a glass of beer sitting at his dining room table with the short man and his wife.
Beer isn't what it used to be. I hope the French beer isn't what it used to be either. Remember the last time, Ted?
Yeah, I remember something better than beer, too.
That estaminet in Arras. She was a smasher. I can see her hair now, blacker than coal.
And that savory piece in Lille. Oh, boy, she taught me a thing or two.
Pity you kept it to yourself.
Ted's wife joins them.
It's proud we should be married to a couple of Don Juans. Don't believe a girl ever looked at him twice, poor old dear.
Yes, Teddy, you looked twice, didn't you?
You caught me off my guard. I was low, following the flu.
Wonder what made you marry me.
You don't know. And that wicked tenor voice you have. Please, then, that's me and Ted will clear later.
Any more for any more?
No, thank you.
It's nearly 12. We've got to be at the depot at 7. Come on home, Dillis.
We'll have them both back before you can turn round. War will be over big Christmas.
War will be over big Christmas. Where have I heard that before?
It's a shame we've got to close the business, Ted.
Why, it's just a habit we've got into, fighting the same war every 20 years.
Nasty habit, too.
Good night, Flo.
Good night.
Good night,
Ted.
Good night, love. See you in the morning.
Di leaves with Dillis.
She's a proper worrier, Dillis. Shame she never had kids. And her always wanting them so much. They'd have took her mind off things.
Well, it's too late now, I suppose. Are you sorry Glad and Mary are grown up?
Well, I am and I'm not, in a manner of speaking.
Well, what about starting all over again, old girl?
No, thank you, Ted. I'm too old for that kind of war work.
On the dusty road in France, remembering Flo's smiling face, Ted is drawn back to the present when Di, shuffling along beside him, stumbles. Ted steadies him. march continues. A young officer remembers a lovely girl sitting on a sofa in his London apartment and listening raptly as he plays the piano. Officer gets up.
Thanks, Stephen. I like that a lot.
The boy definitely shows promise.
Nearly 1 o'clock.
May I catch a lift?
Yes, of course. Come on, Carol. Put your bonnet on.
Carol, Stephen. See you before you embark.
I hear, Robert.
Bye, Stephen, darling. Take care of yourself.
Come on, kids.
Well, wait for me.
As the second woman, Beryl, hurries after Robert, the girl rises.
Come on, Carol.
All right, Robert.
Stephen watches her go. Then he notices she's left her scarf behind.
Caroline! Caroline!
He reaches the top of the stairs in time to hear the car drive off. As he turns back to his apartment,
Stephen.
Caroline comes up the stairs.
Caroline. You left your scarf.
I know. I had to come back.
But Robert... What about
him? I wanted to tell you. It's all over with Robert. I think he understands. I told him 3 weeks ago.
We met 3 weeks ago.
She nods.
I wasn't sure until tonight.
Caroline.
They kiss.
You've only 48 hours before you go to France. It's nothing. And it's everything.
Everything.
I hope you know how to get a special license.
They kiss again. And her face lingers in his mind as he slogs along the road with the other prisoners. A convoy of German tanks rolls past the column, kicking up dust, which the prisoners choke on. One of them spits at the tanks. The rumbling machines frighten a horse. A young soldier, with his eyes bandaged, remembers the face of his sweetheart at the train station.
And don't forget to write, Pippin.
Yes, ma'am.
Aye, and let us know if there's anything you want.
Thank you, Mr. Winterbull. Will you write to me,
Elspeth? Yes, David, I will.
You see, I...
His train begins to move.
Look, David.
Goodbye, David.
Goodbye, David, my boy.
Goodbye, Mother. You
see, take care of yourself, David.
Yes, Mr. Winterbull. Elspeth, you see, I...
Me too, David.
What did you say?
Elspeth runs along the platform, waving goodbye. David's head sags as the tanks roll by. Later, the long, long column of prisoners marches through a German town. Train station that night. The prisoners are herded into boxcars.
Nach Marcel! Los! Los! Schnell! 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60. Mehr Tempo!
A German captain approaches the commanding British officer.
Herr Major, dass die Offiziere von den Mannschaften getrennt werden.
What's he talking about?
A tall officer steps over.
Can I be of any help?
You speak German?
Good. Herr Major hat Sie nicht verstanden. Kann ich ihm übersetzen, was Sie ihm zu sagen wünschen?
Ja, gut. Erklären Sie ihm, dass die Offiziere von den Mannschaften getrennt werden.
He says the officers must be separated from the men.
But we must keep the wounded with us. We've only got one MO among the lot of us.
Der Herr Major bittet, dass wir auf jeden Fall unsere Verwundeten bei uns behalten können. Wir haben nur einen Arzt für uns alle.
Nun gut, dann können Sie vorläufig zusammenbleiben, bis Sie ins Lager transportiert werden.
He says they may stay with us till we reach the camp.
Thank you.
Anyway, a lot of them will remain automatically on the ordinary strength.
That's right. Well, come on, lads. Here we go.
The train pulls out. Inside one of the boxcars.
Fast tricks, Evans.
Mustn't grumble, sir. You'll feel better with a gas mask.
Thank you, sir.
The padre passes out cigarettes.
I don't know that you ought to smoke with that chest.
No, it's nothing. Wound's practically healed.
It's a pretty bad show all around. Well, I take it you fellows feel the same as I do. We mustn't let the jerrys see we're down.
Take the jerrys that get me down. It's them ruddy cobbles. What can I do for my feet, sir?
Do what I do.
Try to forget them. I can't take them off, can I?
How are you, Lennox? Eyes hurting you a bit?
A wee bit, sir.
We'll get the jerrys to give you some proper treatment as soon as we reach camp.
Thank you, sir.
How about you?
Hasn't grumble.
You okay?
Dr. Ben.
How's the arm?
Feels better now, sir.
Good boy.
All right, lads. It won't be long now. Then you'll be able to have a real rest. Thanks for your help just now. Useful man to know. Perfect German. Dalrymple's my name, 31st Lancers.
Geoffrey Mitchell, 5th Oxford Light Infantry.
Oh, where did the jerrys pick you up?
Thionville.
Oh, really? I didn't know the 5th were anywhere near there.
Yes.
Oh.
As the major walks on, the tall officer, Geoffrey Mitchell, grasps the identification bracelet on his wrist and remembers. As he starts across a small bridge near the front, he sees danger coming and leaps for cover into a shell hole. Panting from fear and exhaustion, he crawls deeper into the hole as the fighting draws closer. There's a soldier lying on the edge of the hole. When he tugs on the soldier's jacket, the soldier flops into the hole and lies face down in the mud. Turning the man over, he feels for a heartbeat and finds none. He starts to back away from the soldier and then reconsiders. He's wearing an old shirt and trousers. In the soldier's breast pocket, he finds a wallet. He pulls out an ID card. Mitchell Geoffrey, Captain, Oxford Light Infantry. He also finds an envelope with photos of several different women, including one who briefly catches his eye before he tosses them aside. Removing the identification bracelet from the dead man's wrist, he fastens it around his own. The memory fades, leaving him back in the boxcar with the other exhausted prisoners. The train pulls to a stop. The boxcar doors are opened and the prisoners are ordered out.
Raus, raus! Schnell! Mach, dass ihr rauskommt!
Again, they're forced to march. Soon, ahead of them, they can see a guard tower looming ominously above the high fence around their destination. The major issues a command.
March to attention!
One after another, the men begin to straighten up. and march in step and whistle. As they approach, the main gate swings open. And the long column files into the prisoner of war camp. A sign on the gate identifies the camp as Auflag 27. Back in England, the woman whose photograph briefly caught the eye of the tall officer finds her way into a war office.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Do sit down, will you?
Thanks. My name's Celia Mitchell. I've heard that my husband may be a prisoner of war, Captain Geoffrey Mitchell.
Maybe. Didn't the war office notify you, Mrs. Mitchell?
Well, no, you see, I don't expect he put me down as next of kin.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Your husband's regiment?
The 5th Oxfordshire Light Infantry.
General Index, give me particulars of Captain Geoffrey Mitchell, 5th Oxfordshire Light Infantry, will you?
I'd like to send him parcels. I suppose I can do that.
Oh, yes, certainly. Auflag 27, prisoner of war number 1376. Thank you.
Later, a car pulls up at a gracious manor house, and Celia Mitchell gets out.
Hello, Mummy.
Hello, darling. Well, have you had a lovely day with Grandpa?
Will Father ever come back to his Grandpa, even when the war's over?
Well, would you be glad if he did?
No, he used to make Mummy cry.
He is a prisoner.
Hello, Desmond.
Hello, Mummy.
Janet, I leave you in charge.
The grandfather follows Celia into the house.
Well?
He didn't put me down as next of kin.
They go into the sitting room.
Well, that seems to be the final gesture, doesn't it, my dear?
It was only logical, I suppose. Poor Geoffrey.
Poor Geoffrey. Well, I, for one, don't intend to shed any tears over him.
Father.
Hmm?
I'm going to write to him.
You are?
Yes.
Can't do any harm or good.
They must be glad of any news of home.
I don't remember Geoffrey ever betraying the faintest interest in his home.
I can tell him how the children are getting on.
Yes. I can see Geoffrey regaling his fellow prisoners with news of the children he's scarcely ever seen.
You're afraid, aren't you, Father?
Certainly. I'm afraid that you may let yourself be carried away by sentimentality and suggest patching things up with him.
Don't worry. But we said so many hard, cruel things to each other. I'd like to wipe out the memory of them. And then if we should happen to meet when the war's over, it won't be as enemies.
August 1940, at the well-guarded prisoner of war camp. In the washroom, the British prisoners share space at the long sinks.
Here, go easy with the soap.
Sorry, old boy.
We may make it last 2 days more, if we're very careful. After that, we've got to make do with godliness.
I say, Padre, what are you smoking? Sauerkraut?
Fag ends, or fag ends, or fag ends.
Lucky fella. I'm down to Mr. Middleton's specials. Not a cough in the Compass team.
I hear there's a push up by the Vorlagers. Not too bad in a pipe.
Had a marvellous dream last night.
Anybody I know?
Eggs and bacon. Tomato ketchup this time.
We must have lost a shocking lot of stuff. There's nothing to stop him. He's bound to invade before the end of summer. That's the end of us.
Yes, steady. What about the home fleet?
What about the Luftwaffe waiting for the home fleet?
Well, of all the damned defeatists.
Well, if you prefer to be a ruddy halfwit.
What about the RAF? Hitler can't stage an invasion until he's got control of the air. And I don't see the boys handing him that on a plane.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't judge Hitler by ordinary standards. If he thinks he'll invade, he'll invade.
That said, the tall officer, passing as Geoffrey Mitchell, walks out. Later, in one of the barracks...
My old woman makes the kids pay a penny a week for the Red Cross. I'm writing to her to stop that caper. Red Ruddy Cross. Ruddy sausage we ever get out of it.
It's only 2 months, when...
Don't forget, there were only a few hundred prisoners here before. Now there are tens of thousands. It's a big job.
Yeah, don't let's kid ourselves. Nobody worries about us anymore. We've been written off.
You're a pessimist. How do you spell sufficient?
Same as the Sergeant Major's blessing. Two F's and one C.
Writing about the grub. Muck, I call it. Bit of the old woman's cooking is what I'd like now.
What a sucker I was joining the ruddy army. Picture myself cutting it loose with some of them rowdy old French dames. You know, I am shut up in this place till I'll be past it.
You ought to join the Navy and let the world see you. Now, son, it's no use you blowing off. Take things as you find them. That's always been my motto. Now, the way I look at it is...
Oh, I've got you drip, drip, drip. You turn me up. You're worse than a woman.
Now, knock it, sonny. I was swinging a rifle when your nappers were swinging on the line.
They're swinging the lead, more like it.
Here. If you're after a clip on the ear, my lad, you've come to the right person.
No.
That cigarette. Let me see it.
What do you mean, see it?
Well, it's a player's. Where did you get it?
Saved it up, of course. What's it got to do with you?
I had three players left. You stole it.
Ah, go chase yourself.
Hand it over.
Wipe down, you little Welshman.
Give it back.
The young soldier slugs Di. Ted puts down the boat he's been carving and steps over to Matthews.
You did pinch that fag, you young basket.
Yes, I did. So what?
Just this.
Ted slugs him in the stomach. Matthews sinks to the floor.
I've been asking for it, sonny. I'm a man of peace, and peace is what I'm going to have plenty of in here.
Lummy, they'll have to have you at the peace conference.
How are you today, Jessup?
Nothing grumble, sir.
Managed to get any sleep?
Not so as you notice, sir.
Well, we'll soon get you out of here.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
In the infirmary, the officers come to David, whose eyes are still bandaged.
Morning, Lennox.
Oh, good morning, sir.
Got some good news for you, David.
Yes, Padre?
Yes, my lad. You'll be rejoining the rest of us tomorrow.
Oh, that's fine, sir. And I'll be able to take this bandage off.
Not yet, I'm afraid. You'll have to wait till the optic nerve is completely healthy again. Then they'll send you to the eye hospital for an operation.
So you'll have to be a very patient, my boy.
I'll do my best, sir.
The Major pats him gently.
That's right.
Later, outside, Matthews finds Di and Ted.
I'm sorry, mate. I'll give you a packet of 20 when the Red Cross parcels come.
Losing my temper over a fag. I shouldn't have left them loafing about.
You know, you wouldn't be a bad lad if you got rid of some of your nasty habits.
Now, knock it. Leave all that reforming stuff to the Padre.
What's your job in Civvy Street?
Only sucker's work.
Oh, wide boy, eh?
You bet.
Me and Ted's in the building business. What about learning the trade when we get home?
I'll be home long for you two, Muggs. I'm going to scarp her.
Oh, you got out of tougher spots than this, eh?
Sure.
Got a plan?
Dozens of them. For instance...
You know, I can't make up my mind whether to turn this into a brigantine or a schooner.
As the three men pause to watch a guard strolling outside the fence with a girl, they're observed by Geoffrey Mitchell.
Wonder how Jane's getting on these days. Who's Jane? Your girl? No, the Jane, the strip in the mirror. Oh, yes, the strip in the mirror. Well, I suppose a highbrow like you wouldn't read the Daily Mirror. Oh, I don't know. Why highbrow? I mean, perfect German and all that sort of thing. Spent much time in Germany? Yes. As a matter of fact, I have. Come to think of it, it's funny that none of the rest of your chaps got caught with you. Yes. Did you have a company? Yes, machine gun company. Machine gun company?
Geoffrey realizes he's made a slip.
You see, I think I'll turn it up. Wound's hurting a bit.
With a sharp glance at Geoffrey, Captain Grayson walks off. Matthews, Di, and Ted stroll toward Geoffrey.
Then all I have to do is stow away in one of them garbage bins or something. Watch, as easy as kiss you.
If you're planning an escape, Matthews, may I give you a piece of advice? Individual escapes hardly ever succeed. These things have to be very carefully planned and coordinated by a whole group.
Well, all the same, sir, I'm going to have a go at it. If you've no objections.
Well, good luck to you.
He walks away.
Good luck, two-faced bleeder.
I don't know what it is, but there's something phony about that bloke.
All sucking up with a German MO or the Commandant or somebody.
Look, man!
Geoffrey speaks to a guard who nods.
That settles it.
In the officer's barracks...
But they do have machine gun companies in the German army.
You seriously think he's a traitor?
He speaks German as well as any German.
Of course he does. Why shouldn't he be a German planted here as a stool pigeon?
That'd account for a lot of things.
Yes, we're always talking about home. He never does.
I'd hate to believe it.
Come in.
Matthews enters.
May I report something, sir?
Go ahead.
Well, it's rather confidential, sir. It's about somebody we think's a fifth columnist.
An officer?
Well, matter of fact, sir, it is. Captain Mitchell, sir.
There you are.
A minute ago, he overheard me planning a breakout and went straight over and talked to one of the German guards.
Thank you, Matthews. Keep your mouth shut for the time being.
Very good, sir.
There's only one thing to do with a rat. String him up.
Yeah, wait a bit. Man's innocent till he's proved guilty.
Don't let's behave like a bunch of Nazis. Come on.
Jeffrey comes in.
Hello, Mitchell. You didn't destroy your identity card, did you?
No. Why?
Oh, just check up. Have a look at it.
Jeffrey hesitates, but then hands his identity card to the major, who looks at it, and then holds out a pad and pen.
Do you mind duplicating your signature?
Jeffrey takes the pad and pen, but writes nothing.
You can't do it, you swine, because your name isn't Mitchell. Come on, what are we waiting for? Let's get it over.
Come here! If anything to say, you better say it quick.
It's a long story, and you wouldn't believe a word of it.
You're dead right, we wouldn't. Shut up!
Go on, spill it.
I'm not a German. I'm a Czech.
A Czech in British officer's uniform? That's bloody likely.
I'm in charge here.
Shut up!
That's an order! Come on.
I escaped from a German concentration camp. I got through to France. I took this uniform and the identity card from Mitchell's dead body. It was my only chance if the Germans caught up with me.
If that's the truth, why don't you tell us at once?
Would you believe me? Any more than you do now. Besides, I have more to fear from stool pigeons than you have.
You've no proof of your story?
None. How could I have?
How do you come to speak such perfect English and German?
Well, my father was at the Czech embassy in London after the last war. I spent my childhood there. German's a sort of second language in Czechoslovakia. I became professor of English at Prague University. I'm not much of a soldier, I'm afraid.
What are you talking about, that guard just now?
Oh, I was trying to get a chess set for David Lennox.
All British prisoners will pray at once.
Through the window, they can see some German officers approaching with a civilian.
You make a proof of my story, after all.
How?
A civilian. His name's Forster. Gestapo.
How do you know?
For a time, he ran the concentration camp, I presume.
You think he'll recognize you?
Well, if he does, he'll do your job for you.
Come on.
Outside, the prisoners are formed up on parade.
Stand your men at ease, please. Tenet! Ready! Gentlemen, I present to you Herr Forster, the Foreign Office.
Gentlemen, for the time being, all communications between Germany and England are at a standstill. Your letters, therefore, cannot leave this country. To keep you informed, however, our news bulletins will be broadcast to you in English. And as you cannot hope to receive news from home, arrangements have been made for you to broadcast messages to your next of kin.
The men grumble.
Will all those who wish to avail themselves of Herrn Forster's offer take 3 paces forward?
The men look at each other, but no one steps forward. Forster strolls over to them and walks along the front row, looking at each man. As he nears Jeffrey, he turns to the major.
You are the senior British officer?
Yes.
I am afraid that this is some sort of propaganda trick.
It's just possible.
As you wish.
He steps over to Jeffrey.
Your name?
Mitchell.
Mitchell? You are the officer acting as hospital interpreter.
Yes.
I understand you speak almost perfect German. That's rather unusual for an Englishman.
Is it?
I wonder why your face seems familiar to me. I have many friends in England. Possibly we met there.
Possibly.
Excuse me.
Yes?
The major steps over to them.
Do you wish to continue this conversation?
No.
Prisoners cannot be required to answer any question other than those relating to name, rank, and number.
Oh, quiet, quiet. The matter is of no importance.
As Forster strolls away, the major gives Jeffrey a wink. As the men fall out, the camp loudspeakers come on.
This is today's official war communique issued by the German High Command. The Battle of Britain has entered upon a new and final stage. The annihilation of England's towns and cities by the all-conquering Luftwaffe. Last night, just before sunset, The air raid sirens sounded their ominous wailing notes to the 9 million inhabitants of Greater London. All night, an endless stream of bombers roared above the city, discharging their loads of high explosive and incendiary bombs. Anti-aircraft opposition was negligible, for the British do not possess the guns to defend their homeland. And this attack will continue every night from dusk till dawn until the nerve center and capital city of the British Empire is reduced to a vast pile of rubble, dust, and ashes. The words of our great battle hymn have come true at last. Wir fahren gegen England. We march against England.
The men stand about somberly, looking up at the loudspeakers or staring down at the ground. Finally, Ted tries to rally me.
Come on, boys. Let's give them our great battle hymn.
Roll out the barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out the barrel. We'll have the barrel around.
Sing, boom.
The major takes up the song.
Ring out the song of
and then others begin to sing along.
Now's the time to roll the barrel, cause the gang's all in.
Good!
Roll out the barrel, we have a barrel of fun. Roll out the barrel, we have the blues on the run. Sing blues the barrel, sing out the song.
Back in England, in a doctor's office.
You should have come to see me before this, Mrs. Evans.
Nothing wrong, is there?
No, but you're not exactly robust.
I had the flu last year, but nothing since.
And you're over 40, aren't you?
Only just.
Well, we needn't make any decision yet.
Decision?
I may have to suggest an operation.
I see. Thank you, Doctor.
I was at Fenner's night before last. Miracle none of us copped it. The governor was just standing around. This one's on the house, he said. A lummy it was.
Di's wife comes out.
Everything's all right. Waste of time and money it was making me come and see the old doctor.
Yes.
Your dad wants you to make quite sure, you know.
Yes, of course. Always felt I'd failed him. But never a word of reproach. As kind he is, all through. But now, I won't fail him. I know I won't.
Caroline sits at a piano. Standing nearby, Robert finishes his drink.
Stephen wrote that for me.
My application's been approved, Carol. Staff job, West Africa. I was going to ask you for a photograph, but perhaps I'm better without it.
Look, Robert. Ever since Beryl's been living here with me, I've seen how crazy she is about you. Why don't you and she?
Beryl and I might have made a go of it if I hadn't met you first.
I'm sorry, Robert. I did treat you shabbily.
No, you didn't. I realize now you were never more than just fond of me. You'd have realized it too, even if Stephen hadn't turned up.
I always will be fond of you.
As long as you're happy. That's what matters.
That's sweet of you.
My dear.
Robert kisses her. As he does, Beryl comes in and sees them. Angrily, she turns away. Robert releases Caroline.
I'm sorry.
I'm not. But it's got to be goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Carol.
From her room, Beryl watches him leave. Her jealous dismay soon curdles into a spiteful resolve. At the camp, snow covers the ground. In the barracks...
Last Christmas, I had my first concert. It was there I met Caroline.
In the bunk below Stephen is Jeffrey.
Last Christmas, I was in Dachau concentration camp. Christmas Eve, a new batch of prisoners came in. One of them brought me news of my family. They'd been caught giving food to a Polish Jew. They were taken out and shot. My father, my mother, all of them.
Only 36 shopping days to Christmas?
Christmas. Parked round a blazing fire with a great bowl of hot rum punch.
Looks like snowing again. That should raise the temperature a bit.
What binds me is living by courtesy of Jerry. Can't see any future in it, really.
Say the first 7 years are the hardest.
The next six are anything like this.
Oh, well, the Red Cross parcels are bound to arrive soon.
You've been saying that for exactly 4 months.
I've been meaning it for exactly 4 months.
All I can think about is food. Roast turkey, mince pies, Christmas pudding.
Oh, shut up!
David sits in a waiting room, his eyes still bandaged. The padre comes up with the German medical officer.
Das ist alles.
Who leaves.
Well, Dad, it's me again.
Yes, padre.
David, they can't operate.
Not ever.
No, David.
The padre sits down beside him.
I won't ever see again.
I don't believe it. It's that German doctor.
When I get back to Scotland...
No.
The padre stops David from leaving.
David, it's no use. You've got to face it.
I'll not need this anymore.
You feel now there's nothing left to live for. And that feeling will go on for a long time. But then you'll begin to remember the things that are left. You'll begin to realize that this darkness of yours is not absolute. David, the things that make life worthwhile for all of us are kindness, affection, companionship. The loss of your sight can never rob you of those things, David. We're your friends here. We offer you our help and understanding. And waiting to welcome you home, when all this is over, are your own folk who love you.
David has unwound the bandage from his eyes. Tears trickle down his cheeks.
I'll be all right.
David shuffles over to the door. As he gropes for the latch, despair overcomes him. In the barracks, men huddle around a stove.
What's for tea?
Fancy cakes. Just fancy you've had them.
Good job we haven't got any brass monkeys in here. We'd have the RSPCA down on us and no error.
Can't you do anything with this ruddy stove? Isn't there anything else to burn?
Everyone looks at the model schooner, which Ted has finally finished carving and rigging with sails.
All right.
I never said a word, did I?
Go on, burn the ruddy thing. It's enough for a brew-up.
Matthews looks down. Ted has a last look at the schooner. Then he opens the stove door and thrusts the boat into the flames. Di bursts in.
They've come, hundreds and hundreds of them.
All right, I'll buy it. Hundreds of what?
Red Cross parcels, man. Ready mountains of them.
As the others rush out, Ted watches his schooner burn and warms his hands.
The Red Cross parcels are here!
The news races through the camp.
Red Cross parcels are here!
The officers join the rush. From all sides, men pour from their barracks. Run through the snow-covered compound to meet a tractor towing a wagon piled high with wooden crates. The first to reach the wagon swarm aboard it, perch atop the Red Cross crates packed with parcels from home. A sign posted between the perimeter wire and the fence reads, "Danger. There will be shooting without warning." In the barracks, men play a horse racing game. Others read, repair worn clothes, play chess, stoke the stove, prepare soup, play checkers, draw, write letters, carve, play cards, and make costumes. Di conducts a choir, and Stephen accompanies them, while the major confers with the padre.
OC Sports, you. OC Music, Stephen Harley. Anything else I haven't covered?
No. Extraordinary, isn't it? We seem to have specialists on every subject. Aren't you an expert on anything?
Only racing, I'm afraid. I had thought of starting a little bookmaking business.
Why not? Anyway, our money will be safe. You can't Welsh on us.
At a signal, men near the stove push it aside. A man, grimed in dirt, climbs up a ladder from their tunnel. A second man follows.
Okay, number four shift. How far?
About 3 feet.
Good. By the way, Doc, I put you down OC Entertainment.
Fine. Now, what about me? I've had masses of experience backstage.
What sort of experience?
There's no need to make low innuendos, old man. Come on, brothers! Here he is! Mile from home!
The prisoners crowd around.
Baker! MacDonald!
Later, they read their mail.
My partner's been thrown through the dispensary window.
What, by an angry patient?
No, a bomb.
Well, well, they've requisitioned the church hall.
I say, that's serious.
What is?
Veronica. She sweats all night.
Well, surely she can do something about it with all these little advertisements and things.
Don't be a half-wit. Veronica's a filly. I was getting ready for the flat.
I'm sorry, old boy. I thought you was a pubsy. We're getting ready for the... I thought you...
My kids have been evacuated to the country.
Hey, Sam, my girl, join the land army. They shall wait for me till the cows come home.
That's one way of putting it.
Listen to this. Dear Daddy, today's your birthday. I hope it'll be your last.
Yes. Seeing David sitting alone, Jeffrey joins him.
Hello, David. I didn't notice. Shall I read your letter for you? Thank you. It's signed, Elspeth. Dearest David, your mother says I'm silly to worry about it, but it seems queer, not a word from you yet. Do please send me a line when you get this. The three of us had a little party on your birthday. Wouldn't it be wonderful, darling, if you were home again for your next? I miss you all the time. Your loving Elspeth. P.S. I'm going to join the Wrens.
Will you do me a favor? I'd like to answer it at once.
Yes, of course.
Here's a form.
Right, I've got a pencil. Ready when you are.
My dearest Elspeth, I'm dictating this letter because my wound is not quite better yet. I've been thinking things over, and this is to ask if you'll release me from our engagement.
Jeffrey looks at him in surprise.
I realize now I don't feel the way I fancied I did about you. So it's best to make a definite break. Yours, David.
David, why not tell her the truth?
It is the truth.
How about your eyes, I mean? Why not let her decide when she knows?
Will you please send that letter?
But, David...
Please!
All right, David.
Ted! It's it! It's it! It's it!
You brought off a little words.
Wonderful news, man, wonderful. It's Dillis. There's a baby coming. Good old Di. I reckon that's the best Christmas present you ever had.
I can see her now. The way she smiles with her eyes. Aye, indeed. It's lovely, Ted.
How do I look for a godfather? Why, yes. That's it, man. You and Flo goes without saying.
Stephen is glum.
What's the matter? Got the same chit from the income tax as me, old boy. Well, don't worry. The convoy isn't jugged. We've had it.
Morosely, Stephen rereads the letter he's received. Caroline and Robert are making no attempt to hide their relationship. Everyone feels, as I do, that it's unforgivable of her. I realize how much this will hurt you, Stephen. But it's right you should know the truth. Beryl. Later, outside, as the men exercise, a few of the officers are laying out a playing field.
What wouldn't I give to see Queen's Park play Rangers this year?
Never mind, Padre. They'll be playing over here one day.
What are they?
All prisoners will parade at once.
Hello, what's cooking?
Forster's on the warpath. They're going to search the camp for fine comb.
Forster again.
Achtung!
Aus! Aus!
All British prisoners will parade at once.
Aus! Machen Sie Ausgang! Aus! Aus!
Guards roust the prisoners from the barracks and then begin to search. Forster and the commandant soon find the tunnel under the stove.
Wenn ihnen Gelegenheit geben, darüber an der Front nachzudenken. Grobe
Fahrlässigkeit.
Outside, they confront the assembled prisoners.
Gentlemen, we have discovered your tunnel. Since you have thus abused the amenities accorded you, and pending reconsideration of the camp security measures, all these amenities will be removed until further notice. I've given instructions, therefore, to confiscate all books, writing material, music, all tables and chairs, bedding, mirrors, knives, and shaving equipment.
You may dismiss the body, Major.
Right, yes, miss.
The men fall out. The major walks off with the M.O. and Jeffrey.
I suppose I shall have to grow a beard after all. I don't know whether to have one of those two-pronged affairs or a natty little imperial.
Wonder how long they keep it up. Not more than a month, I should think.
Well, I'll keep on nagging at the commandant.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Forster approaches them.
Good afternoon. I hope this slight setback won't prevent you from trying again. But I must add, a moat will be dug around the whole perimeter, which, as you know, makes tunneling impossible.
He turns his attention to Jeffrey.
Captain Mitchell, who speaks such excellent German. Mir ist immer noch nicht eingefallen, Herr Hauptmann, wo ich Sie schon gesehen habe. Vielleicht war es woanders als in England.
Vielleicht, kann schon sein, bin viel herumgekommen.
Der Kommandant hat mir berichtet, dass Sie überhaupt noch nicht nach Hause geschrieben haben.
Nein, noch nicht.
Auf Wiedersehen bei meinem nächsten Besuch, Herr Hauptmann.
Forster leaves.
What do you want this time?
Wants to know why I haven't written a single letter home.
Well, why should you? Mitchell may have had nobody particular to write to.
But he had. This came today. It's from his wife.
He shows them a letter.
You must answer. If you make inquiries, that'd be fatal.
Seems a pretty cruel fraud.
You're wearing a dead man's shoes. You've got to get used to the feel of them.
My handwriting should know at once that it wasn't her husband.
Yes, and take a bit of figuring out.
Alibi for using your left hand. That's what you need.
Nearby, Grayson and the Padre are pounding a post into the ground.
I can't see much point in this now the bladders have taken away the football.
Well, anyway, it's good exercise.
Think so?
Jeffrey joins them.
I suppose next week they'll give us back the football and take away the goalposts.
Come on, it's your turn now.
Jeffrey takes over for the Padre, holding the post.
Ready?
As Grayson pounds it with a sledgehammer. Steeling himself, Jeffrey suddenly lays his right hand on top of the post.
Look out!
Just as the sledge pounds down. Some weeks later, in England...
Good morning, Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you.
A postman delivers the mail. Celia sorts through it and finds a letter which catches her attention. She opens it and heads into the house, reading intently. She finds her father in the sitting room.
I've mastered the boiler and the power plant. I won't be defeated by a miserable wireless set.
I've heard from Jeffrey.
Really? Is he well?
I don't know what to make of it. He seems to have changed such a lot.
Good. Any change in Jeffrey could only be for the better. Well, the change seems to include his handwriting.
He's hurt his hand. He's using his left.
Oh.
Listen to this. It is a world cut off completely from the real world. Time stands still here. The future is remote, the present empty. Even the past begins to seem unreal. But a man must have something to hold on to. He must forge links to keep him sane. Will you write to me again, Celia? As though I were a stranger. Somebody who knows nothing of your life and your home. Even of yourself.
Change? Why, he's even learned to write grammatically.
Write to him as though he were a stranger.
Caroline sits alone and despondent in a corner of her flat. She gets up to answer the door.
Robert!
Come back to be brief, sort of hush-hush job. Thought you wouldn't mind if I just called in this evening to say hail and farewell.
No, of course not. Come in.
You look ill, Carol.
I'm all right.
I ran into Beryl. She seemed in an odd sort of mood. I gather she isn't living with you any longer.
No. No, she left soon after you went away.
Heard from Stephen yet?
Oh, yes, I've heard from Stephen.
What did he say?
That our marriage is all washed up.
What?
He got a letter accusing me of having an affair with you.
Carol, I... But who?
Beryl.
I see. And he actually believed it?
Yes.
I'll write back myself and tell him the whole thing is a deliberate, malicious lie.
What for?
What for? You don't want Stephen to go on thinking this, do you?
I don't care what he thinks now.
Carol, you mustn't take it like that. Stephen's a prisoner of war.
If you were in his place, would you pay 2 seconds attention to a poison pen letter?
I don't know.
I've never been in love before. I thought being in love meant that you trusted each other completely. All the things he said, I believed every word. To kill my love for him.
Robert steps over to her.
Caroline, my darling, I can't bear to see you cry.
As she turns to him, weeping, Robert consoles her. At a train station, Elspeth parts from her parents.
I tried to get used to it, but I still can't believe it. We were so much in love.
It's a mystery to me.
He's a right to change his mind, I suppose.
Could it be that he doesn't think it's fair to make Elspeth wait on and on?
Do you think it might be that?
No. I don't think David's the kind to make that sort of sacrifice for that sort of reason.
Goodbye, dear. Goodbye, my darling.
Goodbye.
Celia is writing a letter.
The photograph I'm sending makes me look absurdly young, but I'm no longer young. The one of Janet, that funny expression's only the shyness, not stomachache. I can see her now through the window, telling her grandfather how to plant tomatoes. I'm worried about her teeth. Father thinks she should wear one of those wire things. And that hulking boy is Desmond, 9 years old yesterday. The village is livelier than it's ever been. We've a large contingent of evacuees and a lot of other visitors that come and go. Everything's changed, and yet nothing's changed. There's the whistle of the 4:35, half an hour late as usual. Mrs. Truscott still sells her homemade toffee, though where she manages to get the sugar from, I can't imagine. And there's still cricket on Saturday afternoons.
At the camp, the prisoners play cricket out in the yard. In the barracks, Jeffrey, his right hand bandaged, looks at the photo sent by Celia. Then he looks around at the pictures from home which other men have fixed to the walls by their bunks. Smiling to himself, he steps over to his own bunk and begins putting up the photos of Celia and the children. The cricket team files in.
Oof, what a kick in the pants that turned out to be. 5 times more officers in other ranks, and they have to knock the stuffing out of us. It's a mistake having Long On too close to the wire. If he has to run back to take a catch, he's had it.
Yeah. Do you know what the Jerry's want for newborn?
What?
500 cigarettes. Sheer blackmail.
Well, I think it's worth it if this marvelous weather continues.
I wonder if they've been having an early spring.
Jeffrey reads from Celia's letter.
The apple trees are in full blossom already, making the orchard look like a sheet of fleecy snow. And 10-acre meadow is all white, too. Because this year, that's where the ewes are pastured with their lambs. Soon the garden will be filled with the scent and color of the May. And beyond the river, you can see the first vivid green of the larches in the bluebell wood.
He trails off, leaving all of them filled with thoughts of home. Stephen abruptly gets up and goes out. Matthews reads a letter.
Ted?
Hello.
Remember that redhead I told you about? Let's see, is that your own true dream girl, Lovey Pie, or Cheerio Toots?
No, it's my steady. She says the works manager's fallen for her. Says he's a key man.
Sounds like one of them backdoor key men to me, you and your pin-up girls. My pin-up's Tessie O'Shea, with a roll plug.
Yeah, but in my experience...
Your experience? God, bloody, one sniff of a barmaid's apron and you'd be on your hands and knees, sonny boy.
That's all you know. Did you a thing or two?
Ted has a letter of his own.
What's the matter, Ted? Bad news? Ted, after you, but not take it.
Grim-faced, Ted walks out with the letter.
Hey, there, my old woman's gone on the buses.
Or you'll be walking the kitchen when you get home.
If we get home.
He finds Di outside.
It's a firm stand I'm going to take, Ted. The rest of them you can eat, but not Lily Marley.
He cradles a rabbit.
She's got such a trusting look in her eyes. Besides, next winter I shall use her as a hot water bottle.
I've had a letter, Di.
The mail's in. Perhaps there's one for me with news of the baby.
Oh, letter for you. There is news.
Floor's all right. Not them raid.
Oh, she's okay. Letters from her. Di, it's a baby girl. She's doing nice. Dillis. Could have it sooner or later, Di. Seems the doctor warned her about it being dangerous. Because of her age, you know. She wouldn't be put off. Flo was with her at the end. It's all over quite quick. Flo's gonna look after the baby until you get back.
Slowly, Di turns and walks off, still cradling the rabbit in his arms. Later, David reads to several men peeling potatoes.
The play's the thing, wherein thou catch the conscience of the king.
But what happens in the end? Do they bunk the dirty old basket off?
Well, there's a sort of all-round massacre and Hamlet gets killed himself.
First-class gangster stuff.
The old boy certainly knew his onions. You wait till we get to Richard III. There's a mud on practically every page.
You're getting pretty hot at this braille business, David.
Oh, it's easy. But I'm still terrible clumsy with my hands.
Oh, I don't know about that. That tobacco pouch you made was a smashing job.
I've got sort of used to it now, and... Well, you've all been so...
You get on with your reading. I want to know what happens next.
Right.
Jeffrey writes a letter.
Celia, your letter has arrived with the photographs. There in front of me as I write. You ask me to describe our life here so that you may picture it in your imagination. From where I sit, I can hear the sound of a piano. It is my friend Stephen Harley. I wish you could hear this music of his singing, for it describes our life here better than I could ever do in words. It tells of men emerging from the twilight, turning their faces inwards from the wire, creating in miniature a world of their own. It tells of men who have come to terms with the present and have found it far from empty. Men who no longer lie down to fate, but face it and find their own. own ways of beating it.
Prisoners cheer a boxing match, run a lending library, paint portraits, attend lectures, play basketball, bet on horse races. And sing in a choir conducted by Di. In the officers' barracks, Stephen and several others listen to a phonograph. Night, the men crowd into a makeshift theater for a skit. A prisoner in a fairy costume dances onto the stage. Other prisoners, similarly costumed, join him in a chorus line.
All this goes to make up the picture of our life here, made bearable only by the letters and parcels we receive from home. They keep our bodies and our faith alive. And that is true not only of us here in our little wire-enclosed cinder patch, but also of the scores of other camps throughout Germany. Great sprawling towns of 20,000 men, or hamlets of a few hundred, each a little piece of England. Months pass, and my thoughts are constantly of you, Celia. Summer gives place to autumn, autumn to winter. Another Christmas come and gone, another batch of prisoners to swell our numbers. They don't make the housing problem any easier, but they bring us eagerly awaited news of the outside world. A little while ago, there was a rumor that some of us to be repaid. I allowed myself to dream that these letters of ours could come to life, that I could see with my own eyes your home, the children, yourself. But the commission never came. Were we forgotten, or was it just one more reprisal?
In the barracks, a guard locks a handcuff on David's wrist and then heaves a sigh.
Orders.
Outside, the prisoners are assembled on parade.
As a reprisal for such an unwarranted action, all British prisoners of war at Offlack 27 will, until further notice, remain Americans from dawn until dusk.
You may dismiss the parade, the Mayor. Parade! Parade!
As the commandant follows Herr Forster out of the compound, the prisoners disperse and return in handcuffs to their barracks. Angrily, Ted kicks a stool and then sits down, glaring at his new manacles.
Cigarette?
Thanks.
Matthews is unchained.
It's easy. Sardine key.
With it?
Turn to the right.
He frees Ted.
Turn to the left. Bob's your uncle. All part of the Red Cross service.
November 1942.
Our third winter is approaching, bringing with it a new enemy. It is not the duration, but the indefiniteness of duration. For if a man knew the length of his sentence, he could plan accordingly. Afterwards, in our memories, we shall relive only the sunny days, the pleasant scenes, the freedom of mind and the comradeship. We shall forget the wet days, the wet weeks, those days when it seemed an effort to do nothing and our bunks were the only release. Deep down in the hearts of all of us, there dwells a lonely ache, a desperate yearning for those we love, and a fear of becoming forgotten men. Write to me again soon, Celia. You could never know how great the comfort is that your letters bring me. They're more than comfort. They give me strength and hope and happiness. You'll never know how much they mean to me.
Oh, my dear, I'm so terribly moved by what you write. Is it too late to recapture the happiness of our first years together?
I have no place in your past or your future, Celia. You must think of your husband as dead. This is goodbye.
I understand. Don't be afraid. I'll help you back. I'll give you back your strength. The strength you've given to me, writing to me through these dark years. I'll wait for you.
Spring has returned, and the prisoners are enjoying the fair weather. Jeffrey sits in the sun reading a letter. A distant drone makes him look up, shading his eyes. Others begin to look up as well. High above them, a squadron of bombers flies by.
Fortresses. They'll soon be able to see the channel.
They'll be home in time for tea.
March 1944. Prisoners amuse themselves sailing model boats on a little pond they've flooded. In the officers' barracks...
That's exactly £157 you owe me.
Cut you through the pack, double or quits.
Not in your life. I've got my old age to think of.
Bloodsucker?
Oh, well. Bang goes my gratuity.
Cheap enough to pass the time.
Funny how much you learn about time when you're killing it.
Such as what?
I've got a theory that everything that counts is done by busy people. When you've got too little time, it's extraordinary what you can do with it. When you've got all the time in the world, like us, you don't do a thing.
That's it, Doc. You're becoming quite a philosopher in your old age.
Why not? The war hasn't exactly chosen us to be heroes.
I know exactly what I'm going to do with my time right now. I'm going to climb into my bunk and do absolutely nothing till supper.
They're talking about Terran for the derby this year. It'll be the fourth derby I've missed. Four derbies. That's a hell of a lot of time. With nothing up or down on the book to show for it.
Lying in his bunk, bored to frustration, Grayson scrapes his boot across a pin-up picture on the wall. Outside...
Bloody leaks again this year, Di?
I was thinking of trying some asparagus.
Asparagus? That takes 7 years, Cop.
Aye.
I don't give it more than another year myself.
Another year? Gwyneth will be four.
Flo's hair's gone all white, she says.
Everything's changing. Do you think we'll be able to pick it up? The business and everything?
Search me. We're not as young as we were, Di.
No, Ted. We're not as young as we were.
Later, inside...
Surely they'll invade soon.
Yeah, that's what you said last year.
And the...
What's your goddamn mate holiday list?
Yeah, it's got due down for August 1940.
Jeffrey listens to Stephen playing.
I wrote that for Caroline. Somehow it expressed what I felt when I first met her. It was after a concert. There weren't any taxis. We walked back across the park. After a bit, it began to rain. My coat off her shoulders.
You're still in love with her, aren't you?
I've tried to shut her out of my thoughts completely. But I can't. I long for her. All the time.
And I'm a bigger fool than you are. Falling in love with a photograph. Dream. And a home in a strange land.
Forster walks in.
Oh, carry on. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Oh, please, do carry on.
He steps up to Jeffrey.
Each time I visit camp, I'm intrigued as to where we met before. But now I think I know the answer. Your name wasn't always Jeffrey Mitchell. Your identification photograph is being sent to Gestapo headquarters in Berlin. They have a large collection of photographs there. It'll be interesting to make comparisons.
He strolls out.
I suppose it had to come. They always catch up with you in the end.
Repatriation, fellas! Repatriation!
Great news, gentlemen! Great news! Repatriation! And this time's the real McCoy! Just the thing that makes my mouth water. Real love girls, hundreds of moonlighting up waiting for me.
Girls, what are they?
Five beds, old boy, furnished with two of practically everything.
The mixed German and Swiss medical commission will examine all those whose names are down for repatriation. Apparently it's a rush job. So anybody who gets his ticket will leave in a week's time.
So you've got a chance.
Jeffrey considers.
Yes. But we must have positive evidence to justify repatriation.
The medical board has convened.
Anything else, Corporal?
Well, sir, every time I breathe, I can feel my liver knocking up against my kidneys.
Come here.
Ted steps up to a doctor.
Cough, please.
Cough. Lummy, do you want me to bring up my appendix?
The board members examine Ted's x-ray.
Yeah.
Then the chief signs Ted's form and hands it to him.
You have passed.
Thank you, sir.
Matthews?
Outside.
I wonder if you'll get through.
Mm.
Hello, Evans. You'll soon be seeing your youngster.
Yes, indeed. I'm sorry to hear about you and Captain Grayson, sir.
Oh, well, the flat racing season's over.
Do you know that Swiss fellow actually had the nerve to congratulate me on my fitness?
Stephen joins
them. Well,
I got my ticket all right.
Aye, you have passed.
Matthews grins.
Suits me, sir.
Captain Mitchell.
Jeffrey steps forward and begins unbuttoning his shirt.
Ah, you need not strip, Captain Mitchell. I regret your case is deferred until the next board in 6 months' time.
Jeffrey turns away, hiding his dismay. Soon after...
Once it's discovered he's not Mitchell, he's sunk. They'll have no mercy. We've got to do something for him.
Yes, but what?
Excuse me, sir. Can we put up a scheme to you?
Sure. Sit down. What's it all about?
We know the spot Captain Mitchell's in.
We thought we'd have to fix up a stunt to get him out of here.
What's the scheme?
Well, sir, there's a list of blokes for repatriation in the Commandant's office.
We thought if we could get hold of it, alter the names.
Stage a break-in, sir.
Here, here, hold on. We aren't professional burglars.
Oh, yes, sir. As a matter of fact... Well, I was.
Were you really? How awfully interesting. Commandant's office. Anyone wire to cut?
Yes, but what about the perimeter lights?
They always put them out when there's an air raid.
And they've been as regular as clockwork lately.
Gosh, I believe we've got something.
Suppose we do get the list. What then?
I can type.
Scratch out one of the names beginning with M and type Mitchell's on instead.
Yes, but just a minute. Don't you see the chap whose name goes off has to stay behind?
Well, my name begins with M, sir.
They look at Matthews.
You'd really give up your ticket home?
Why not? But I thought all the girls were lining up for you to come home.
Well, so they are. But they'll wait.
You are a sportsman.
Gentlemen, we'll have a smack at it. Now, as I see it, the drill is this.
Nighttime. As a searchlight beam sweeps slowly through the camp, guards patrol with dogs. Prisoners are gathered in the mess hall.
My eyes are dim, I cannot see, I have not brought my spirit.
Grayson signals for quiet. The camp lights begin to go out.
Here come the boys, bang on the dot.
What do you mean?
Well, just another raid, old boy. All right, chaps, light up and sing up.
As small lamps are lit, Jeffrey looks questioningly at Grayson, who only smiles. The Major and Stephen appear in the doorway with their faces blackened.
They haven't yet started. No. God bless the RAF.
A third figure runs across the compound, ducks behind the loudspeaker post to avoid the searchlight, and then runs on toward the other two.
Here he is.
Good boy.
Okay.
Look up.
They pull Matthews into the doorway as the searchlight passes. Then, crouching low, the three men scurry across the parade ground. On the far side, they duck into another doorway just before the searchlight sweeps by. Slipping around a corner, they reach the fence that separates the prisoners' compound from the camp administration building. At a nod from the Major, Matthews cuts through a strand of barbed wire. and then a second strand. One after another, they crawl through the fence and dart over to the administration building.
All clear.
Matthews runs for the door of the commandant's office and ducks into it just ahead of the searchlight. He's picking the lock when suddenly the door beside him opens. It's the guards' room. He shrinks back into the shadows as a guard comes out and goes off. Matthews gets the office door open and slips through it. The major and Stephen hurry to join him. Inside, they look around until they locate a filing cabinet.
That's the lock you've got to pick.
Matthews goes to work on it.
Goodness, typewriter. Get up!
They duck as the searchlight sweeps by the window. As Stephen moves the typewriter down to the floor, the major joins Matthews.
It's tougher than I thought. Let me try.
The major pushes in a release button and pulls the drawer open.
Must be a bit out of practice.
I'll say.
They search through the files.
I'm ready. Good. This is it.
They bring the list to Stephen, who rubs out Matthew's name, and then rolls the list into the typewriter. The major keeps a lookout at the window, while Stephen types in Jeffrey Mitchell's name where Matthew's name was.
Sing, you so-and-so, sing!
He ducks as the searchlight sweeps by. The prisoners continue their sing-along.
Come on.
Matthew sticks the altered list back in the file cabinet and starts out after the other two. At the door, he stops and turns back and puts the typewriter back on the desk before he slips out. Hurrying back to the fence, they crawl through it and then reattach the cut strands.
Yeah, idle fool. Should do.
Let's split up and get back to our own huts.
Okay, sir.
The major hurries off with Stephen. As Matthews takes off in another direction, a guard dog senses him and gives chase. When he pauses by the loudspeaker pole, the dog bounds from the shadows, leaping at his throat and knocking him down. Their struggle quickly draws a searchlight. Inside, Jeffrey is alarmed.
What's going on?
You're not supposed to know.
The boys are out there putting your name on the repatriation list.
Ignoring the machine gun fire, Jeffrey hurries to a window and climbs out. Matthews, meanwhile, struggles to keep the fierce guard dog from ripping out his throat. He hurls it aside just as bullets stitch past them, missing him but killing the dog. Jeffrey finds him and lifts him to his feet and half carries him to the nearest door. As they slip through it, the lights come back on and the commandant strides into the barracks.
Mighty soon I'll be hallowing to that cold
army of mine.
You will all remain here until the other huts have been checked.
One sunny morning soon after, Stephen, wearing a new identification tag, makes his way past other grinning prisoners also wearing ID tags. He finds the major with Grayson and the M.O.
Permission to go home, sir?
Yes. Provided you put a fiver on Terran, the Derby, for me.
It's you that ought to be going home.
Oh, don't you believe it. I'm a social parasite. The sort we're fighting to get rid of.
That's right. I've got to stay here and exterminate him.
Don't slow with the popsies, I know. Don't forget to save a couple of peach-fed blondes for your Uncle Jim.
That's a promise.
Of course, I was forgetting. You're one of those one-woman blokes, aren't you?
Yes, that's my trouble.
Sorry, Ernie. Always putting my foot in it.
Nearby.
Don't forget to tell the girls around Hammersmith Way that I'll be home soon, and I've got plenty saved up to give them a treat with.
Yeah, you bet. And we keep a job warm for you. Horsfall, Evans, and Matthews. Unlimited.
Jeffrey joins them.
Hello, Matthews. Feeling all right?
Yes, it's all right, sir. Oh, it's a city party night like that.
I can never thank you for what you've done.
Oh, forget it. Just keep your head down on the parade and pop your uncle.
Thanks.
Don't worry, sir. You'll get through all right. We'll be right behind you, sir.
Jeffrey smiles. The M.O., meanwhile, questions the Major.
One other thing. What about the German M.O.? He's certain to be on parade, and he's more likely than anyone to remember that Mitchell's name wasn't on the list.
I know, I've thought of that. I'm going to start up a conversation with him while they're calling the names.
He only speaks about a dozen words in English.
You leave it to me.
David approaches.
Hello, David, my boy. Goodbye, and good luck.
Goodbye, sir, and thank you. Oh, see you again before you know where you are. Yes.
Come on, David. Don't forget we've got a bridge date tonight.
Not forgetting the cigarettes you owe me, Padre.
At the front gate,
Ambrose!
A guard with the list of names,
Anderson!
Checks off each departing prisoner.
Barn!
Jeffrey approaches the Major.
There are a lot of things I'd like to say, but I can't.
Go on. Off you go. Goodbye. Good luck.
So long, old boy.
Good luck. Keep out of the German MO's eye line.
Jeffrey joins the line.
Grant! Harley!
The German M.O. stands near the gate, watching the departing prisoners.
Horsthall! Jackson!
The Major strolls over to the German M.O.
How soon do you think the war will end now, Doctor?
6 months, 1 year if you like.
By then you'll be speaking fluent English.
You think I've made good progression?
Oh, terrific. Yes, you Germans certainly have the gift for languages.
You think so?
Oh, but of course.
The M.O. turns to him.
After the war, then I've been making me headmaster of Oxford University.
Mitchell!
The guard checks Jeffrey's ID tag, then lets him through.
Meiter!
The Major notices.
Achtung!
A little later... The column of departing prisoners marches off, waving farewell to the comrades they're leaving behind. The remaining prisoners gather at the fence, watching glumly now, as the lucky ones head off for home. While they remain incarcerated in the camp. To conceal his despair, Matthews turns away. Troop ship is towed to its berth. An enthusiastic crowd is waiting to welcome the men back. The men from Auflag 27 are among the many hundreds lining the rails of the ship. As the ship approaches the dock, they all look down, watching and waiting for the moment when, at long last, they're home. Outside the arrival area, a policeman stops Celia.
I'm sorry, madam, but you can't go in.
I must. It's my husband. Please.
He lets her through. Begin to stream off the ship. David is escorted by an orderly and a nurse. Jeffrey and Stephen come down the gangway. Ahead of them in this dream, Ted and Di make their way toward the arrival area. As Jeffrey and Stephen approach the arrival area, Celia appears, working toward them against the stream. They both recognize her from her photograph. As they draw closer, Stephen tactfully moves ahead. But as Celia passes him, he turns back to watch. Jeffrey stares at her, transfixed, as she comes right up to him, looking beyond him, and barely glancing at him, before she moves on, searching for her husband. Jeffrey takes a step after her, wanting to call her name, but not quite able to. Stephen rejoins him, and they go on together. Arriving home with his mother, David pushes open the front gate.
What's happened to the iron gate, Mother?
It went for salvage 2 years ago.
I'll miss the squeaking of that old gate. Have there been any other changes?
No. I kept your room exactly as it was the day you went off to France.
Inside.
Same old smell. Sunlight soap and furniture polish.
You come in here for a minute, and I'll get you something to eat.
She leads him into the sitting room and leaves, closing the door behind her.
David.
Elspeth.
He turns toward her voice.
That last letter. Your mother showed it me, telling the truth about your eyes. So that was the reason.
The reason for what?
For breaking our engagement.
But you can't go on being engaged when you're not in love any longer.
You can't go on breaking a person's heart to satisfy your own stupid pride.
I'm not prepared to discuss the matter.
Neither am I. David. Why did you have to make me so dreadfully unhappy?
She lays her head on his shoulder and he embraces her. Stephen climbs the staircase to his flat. Unlocking the door, he steps inside. As he looks around somberly, the bedroom door opens.
Caroline.
She comes out with a suitcase.
But what are you...
There were some things I left behind. Caretaker let me in. I had no idea. I'll go now.
Stephen steps in front of her.
Caroline.
Yes, Stephen.
Are you all right?
She looks down.
Why are you crying?
Because I'm a fool.
Are you unhappy with Robert?
I'm not with Robert. Oh, Stephen. Why did you have to believe that letter?
She walks out.
Wasn't true.
No. Not then.
Go on.
When I got your letter, it was as if all I'd ever believed in didn't exist anymore. I didn't care what happened.
He was in love with you?
Yes.
And you?
No. Let me go now, please.
She starts down the stairs.
Listen, Caroline. Everything seemed so out of proportion. I think I was mad for a bit. See, I loved you so desperately. Still do. I always shall.
Stephen.
He steps down to her. And they kiss. Arriving in their hometown, Ted and Di climb down from the truck.
Thanks, mate.
On which they've caught a lift.
Thanks. Well, this is it, Di?
Yes.
How do you feel?
Empty inside.
Me too. Like it wasn't me standing here at all. Come on, Di, let's get weaving.
They walk down a quiet street of row houses. Ted knocks on his front door. Flo opens it. Her eyes light up when she sees him.
Hello, old girl.
Hello, Ted. Journey all right?
I was seasick.
Stomach always was your weakness.
He nods and gently touches her hair.
Suit you.
Oh, Ted.
Yeah.
He hugs her.
We can't leave Di out in the cold like that.
Oh, Di.
Hello, Flo.
Oh, it's lovely to see you. Come on in.
They go inside.
Where is she?
Come here.
Laying his coat over the banister, Di steps into the sitting room and stops, looking at the little girl with a ribbon in her hair who's cradling a doll. When he walks over to her, she looks up at him and smiles.
Hello, Gwyneth.
Hello.
You know who I am?
Yes, you're my daddy, aren't you?
That's it. Look. I made this in the prison camp for you.
He shows her a doll.
Can she shut her eyes?
No, she can't.
Margaret Rose can.
She's lovely.
Di embraces her. At the war office.
So that's settled. Captain Hashek reports the duty to check headquarters.
There was something I wanted to ask, sir. About Mrs. Mitchell.
Oh, yes. Very awkward, of course. Don't worry, Captain Hashek. We've got that matter in hand.
I wanted to suggest, sir, as it's my responsibility, that if the notification of her husband's death could be delayed until I've seen Mrs. Mitchell myself...
You'd have to be told through the usual channels, you know.
Yes, sir, but in a case like this, it's...
The war office will look after it. Well, of course, if you'd like to go down and see her off your own bat, there's nothing to stop you.
I see. Thank you, sir.
At home, Celia is staring sullenly out a window when her father comes in.
Looks like rain.
He notices her sadness.
My dear, it's no good going on hoping. You must face up to it.
That he won't come back?
That he won't come back.
As she turns away, struggling with tears, her daughter runs in.
Grandpa, it's starting to rain. Come help me put the chairs in the summer house. Oh, come on.
He hustles out with her. Celia turns. Through the glass in the front door, she sees the outline of a soldier. A smile lights up her face, and she runs to open the door. Her smile dies.
Oh.
It's Jeffrey.
I'm sorry, I was expecting someone else.
Mrs. Mitchell, I came to see you. I have some news for you of your husband.
Oh. Come in, please.
Celia shows him into the sitting room. In mounting dread, she closes the door behind her.
What?
Your husband is dead.
She sinks down on a chair.
Dead?
He was killed 4 years ago in the fighting at Saint-Valery.
I heard from him. From the prison camp.
Your husband was never in that prison camp. He was never a prisoner of war.
But the letters...
I wrote those letters.
You?
Yes.
He takes out the wallet.
And I
took these from your husband's body. I took his name, his uniform, his identity. For 4 years, I've been Jeffrey Mitchell.
Celia looks up at him, then moves away.
But why?
To save my life. The Germans were after me.
The letters?
Later in the camp, I had to write. They suspected me. If I hadn't answered your letters, they'd have been on to me.
You had to answer my letters. I understand that. You even had to go on writing. I understand that, too. Why did you have to write the way you did? I believed every word you said.
At first, I had to make you tell me as much as possible about yourself. I was fighting for my life. And then I got your other letters, photos of the children, you, glimpses of things lost to me forever. It was as if you were offering me a new world. It was easy out there to delude oneself.
And I believed a wonderful thing had happened. My husband had left me, and those letters made me believe he was mine again. That everything would be as I'd hoped it would be. I planned for the day he'd come home again. For a new life together. What a fool I was.
You were still in love with him.
How can I tell now?
I know there's no excuse for what I did, but...
Will you go now, please?
You must believe that I meant what I wrote. Your letters came to be my life. You see, I fell in love with you. It was a dream then. Now, it's reality.
He leaves. May 8, 1945. Thousands of people throng the streets, waving flags and dancing for joy because the war at last is over. Celia reads a letter from Geoffrey.
I allowed myself to dream that these letters of ours could come to life. That I could see with my own eyes your home, the children, yourself.
She looks up, her eyes bright with tears and longing. Auflag 27 has been abandoned. The buildings are deserted. Barracks empty. In one of them, a few words have been crudely painted on the wooden wall. Gone away, address Blighty. Fireworks light up the sky. As Celia enjoys them with the children, her father calls her from the house.
You're wanted on the telephone.
Who is it?
Captain Harshing.
Celia smiles. She dashes into the house, rockets soar into the sky. She grabs the phone, and they speak with each other. Both of them, brimming with joy, as the rockets explode in showers of stars. The end. Captain Carol Hashik, Michael Redgrave, Celia Mitchell, Rachel Kempson, Mr. Mowbray, Frederick Lester, Private Evans, Mervyn Johns, Mrs. Evans, Rachel Thomas, Corporal Horsfall, Jack Warner, Mrs. Horsfall, Gladys Henson, Dr. James Harcourt, Lieutenant Lennox, Gordon Jackson, Mrs. Lennox, Elliot Mason, Elspeth McDougall, Margot Fitzsimmons, Mr. McDougall, David Keir, Lieutenant Harley, Derek Bond, Caroline Harley, Jane Wyndham, Beryl Curtis, Mariel Forbes, Commander Robert Marsden, Robert Wyndham, Major Aussie Dalrymple, Basil Radford, Captain Jim Grayson, Guy Middleton, Private Matthews, Jimmy Hanley, Captain Thurston, Ralph Michael, Padre, Jack Lambert, Forster, Carol Stepanek, Camp Commandant, Frederick Richter, German M.O. Frederick Schiller, Janet, Jill Gibbs, Desmond, David Walridge.
This described version of The Captive Heart was created by Audio Vision Canada. For other described movies and audio cinema titles available from Audio Vision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755.